Good morning.
Good morning.
And good morning. So this morning, I'm going to talk about a couple of cons. Cons are, again, for those of you who've not been around, I've been talking about cons for a while now, for a couple months, because we're studying cons in our practice period. Cons are just simply interchanges between teachers and students, or students, or teachers and teachers that were recorded, and then that were talked about, and were discussed, and were meditated on. That's all they are. So I'm going, hi.
Hi.
I'm waiting for them to sit down. So I'm going to talk about two recorded in the 9th century in China, which is when there was all this action in Chinese Zen, and the recording of these koans all took place. And these koans are these stories. Let's forget the term koan. These stories of interchanges are these two that I'm going to talk about are about awakening, about satori, about opening beyond small mind, and actually about probably 2/3 of the stories are about that. Now Soto, we say, oh, we don't, enlightenment's no big deal, but our Chinese teacher sure didn't think that, because that's what the stories are all about. So think about that one a little bit. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. Even better. Okay. So the first one, case 32 in the gateless gate, in the gateless barrier, which we're not going to study in practice period. An outsider asked Buddha for guidance. I do not ask for the spoken. I do not ask for the unspoken. He didn't want just words. He didn't want just silence. He wanted guidance in stopping the mind road, the road that's always going off here, there, and the other. And so Buddha sat still. The outsider had an awakening. The outsider then said, "World honored one, with your great compassion, you have opened the clouds of my delusion and enabled me to enter the way." He made his bows and left. Ananda asked, you remember this one?
Yes.
Ananda asked, "What did the outsider realize to make him praise you?" Buddha said, "He is like the fine horse who runs even at the shadow of the whip." So, first of all, Buddha's response or non-response is sitting still. He just sat still. So I think my last talk I talked about my first teacher, Suzuki Roshi, and my friend. I had a small group in my hometown, which Suzuki Roshi would come down to once a week in California. And then he would have to take him home to San Francisco during rush hour. Because, we sat, what time of morning we sit, right? And then we would be done at rush hour. So they would be going into San Francisco at rush hour. And getting into San Francisco at rush hour is about, you can't compare anything that happens in Minneapolis and St. Paul. You just can't compare it. So my friend Phil was the one who usually took him back. And Phil looked forward to it, as I said last time, wanted to engage him in conversation. But every time Suzuki Roshi fell asleep. And he slept the whole way with the traffic and the beeping and the hollering. So, is there a teaching there? Or is it just a tired guy? I don't know. I don't know. So this is also about the outsiders and the insiders, this koan. Ananda who asks, what did the outsider realize to make him praise you, is an insider. Ananda has been with Buddha for years and years and years already. He's been his main attendant. He's the guy who remembers everything. He remembers everything the Buddha says. So apparently that we'd have no Nikayas if it weren't for Ananda. We'd have no original scriptures if it weren't for Ananda. He's the insider. So outsiders and insiders. Zen, certainly, even now, we're the outsiders. We're the outsiders in a predominantly Judaic Christian community. Even in 2009, maybe not in my hometown of Palo Alto, but in this town, we're still the outsiders. And then, of course, we become insiders in the outsider group after a while. This is about the outsider not being habituated to how Buddha is going to be, and being able to just have that fresh mind, that beginner's mind, which Ananda doesn't have because he's too used to Buddha. He's too used to being with him. He's too used to his moves and his own moves and that habitual stuff that we zone out on. We all have experiences in our lives sometimes of being outsiders. And sometimes being insiders. And of course we want to be insiders. It feels more comfortable. But in terms of ability just to be present and just to be awake and alive, I don't know if being an insider is best. I don't think you can say that. You can say that, but I wonder. So Ananda says, what did the insider realize to make the outsider realize to make him praise you? So Ananda's probably a little pissed, right? I mean, Ananda gives himself, if you read about Ananda, he gives himself continually to helping Buddha out, to doing stuff to support the Sangha. And who does Buddha praise? The outsider. So I've told the story before about going out with Katagiri Roshi to Massachusetts many years ago when Robert Thurman invited him to make some presentations in Amherst, Massachusetts. We had had Robert Thurman here, and Robert Thurman thought Hojo-san was a great teacher, and he invited him out. And so I went out as, I guess, his attendant, although I was not very attentive. That's another story. But I wanted to support him. I went out to support him and be there. We were both outsiders there. This was not our territory. Katagiri Roshi amazed me. I mean, I had sat here and listened to him day after day, year after year, but out there, I don't know. What was different? Was it my mind? Was my mind different? Was I no longer anticipating his every move and thinking, oh, he's going to say this again? I had been so close to him here in proximity because I was president for five. I'd been president for 5 years. At the same time, I was one of two priests. So had I forgotten how to appreciate him just by being with him? Did I need to go to the other end of the country to do that? I don't know. I was amazed. I thought, this guy is wonderful. Wonderful. And of course, the people in Massachusetts thought he was wonderful, too. The attentiveness, the receptiveness, the openness. And they'd never heard him speak. But they were in an open mindset, and I guess a good mindset. So on the way back, I said to him something about, "You were wonderful," and I said, "And look how responsive those people were to you. I bet you would like to stay there instead of come back here." And he said, "Oh, they would get used to me too." They would get used to me too. Getting used to. What we do. We get used to. What is getting used to? It's in our head. I know your moves. I know what you're going to say. I can anticipate. We've been through that again. Oh, another Sunday morning talk. Another this and none of that. We get used to it. But that's not our fresh mind, you guys. It's not the fresh mind, the fresh reservoir of stillness that's always here. So when we came back, then I tried to do a better job, not to anticipate, and it worked for a while. But then I settled back. I settled back into partly. I think because I had these two roles as the president, I was always doing these other things and sort of probably feeling kind of critical, which I'm sorry about. But so that's the second point I wanted to make about this. The third point is Ananda asked, "What did the outsider realize to make him praise you?" Buddha said, "He is like the fine horse who runs even at the shadow of the whip." So in the Nikayas, in the earliest scriptures, Buddha talks about four different kinds of horses. The first horse runs when he just sees the shadow of the whip, just the shadow. The second horse runs when he sees the whip in the air. The third horse runs when it's on his flesh. And the fourth horse runs when it just penetrates all the way down to the bone. So in this story, Ananda is the slow horse. And I think Buddha is a little bit rude, don't you? But Ananda is the slow horse. Because his mind is very busy. His mind is very busy. Because for Ananda, awakening to the mind that does not fix anywhere, which Huainang talks to us about, which Huainang seems to have realized without sitting at all, for Ananda, this is hard because his mind is innately, some people's minds are innately more busy than others. They're innately more worried, more involved with worrying and being busy. And Ananda's is. So he's a slow horse. He's a slow horse. So now the next story, okay? The next story takes place in the 9th century. This first story took place supposedly during Buddha's time. Then I must have been orally transmitted. Then it must have been written down. Then it must have been written down again and again. Whereas this one is contemporary because we're in the 9th century here. Well, why not? Why not? This is Seppo and Ganto, but I'm trying to use the Chinese names, which are their real names, so I'll try to use them. Shui Feng and Yin To. So Shui Feng and Yin To are peers. They're 6 years apart in age. Shui Feng has been practicing 6 years longer than Yin To, practicing Zen. Shui Feng has been practicing with great diligence for years with little or no experience of awakening. He's been a cook. He's been a manual laborer. He's done many things to support people in their practice, but he's had little or no awakening. So here's the story. So Shui Feng and Yin To were snowed in on Turtle Mountain for 3 days. Yin To slept. Yin To slept. While Shui Feng sat in Zazen. Shui Speng, who was very, very diligent in his manual labor, his cooking, even in his zazen, even though nothing seems to happen. He's still very diligent. On the third day, Yento sat up from his bed. And he said to... Actually, I have trouble with these names. I'm just going to use Seppo and Ganto. He said to Seppo, get some sleep. Who do you think you are, a roadside shrine? Get some sleep. Who do you think you are, a roadside shrine? Well, so we did something. What's a roadside shrine? A roadside shrine is something it looks like it's sitting straight, it's beautiful. We maybe gassho to it if we're in Japan or if we're in Tibet, but then we pass it by. We just pass it by. We forget about it. It's not deep. It's not emanating any real being at ease where it is. It's kind of just on the surface. And so he was making fun of Seppo's straight sitting and trying to be someone through a sitting. He's saying, get some sleep. Forget it. So then Seppo answers by touching his chest and saying, my heart's not at peace. I can't fool myself. My heart's not at peace. I can't fool myself. And Yento then gave a great yell and said, don't you know that the family treasure doesn't come in through the gate? Don't you know that the family treasure doesn't come in through the gate? Let it flow out from your own breast to cover the sky and the earth. And supposedly, at that time, Seppo has an awakening, supposedly. So I read this once before, a few years ago, and I'd forgotten about it. I think I probably even talked about it. And then I was reading it again a couple of days ago, and it reminded me of something, an interchange I had with Suzuki Roshi, where I didn't have an awakening, but I thought, oh, he said almost the same thing. So this is a time when I was practicing Zen in my home area, the San Francisco area, and I've been practicing with diligence. I think I was a pretty good shrine, a pretty good roadside shrine. I remember my friend Howard said he didn't like to sit with me because he thought I was doing competitive Zen. That's what he said. I don't know. I won't fess up to it. So I had learned to be a pretty good roadside shrine when people were looking at me, at least. If you know what I mean. So, and I had spent time in San Francisco in a Tassajara Zen monastery and in Palo Alto and sitting. Another Zen teacher had come up to me after being at Tassajara Zen monastery, and he'd said, he was starting a monastery, and he said, you could come and practice with me. He said, your sitting is very wonderful. Well, Suzuki Roshi never told me my sitting was wonderful. He said, and I see you have the potential for great awakening. And I thought, well, my teacher never even pays any attention to me. He never says I'm wonderful or awful. I think he doesn't even know who I am. He didn't show any interest in my personal life. My wife, I went, the eternal dialogue went on, and here's a guy who's singled me out. Of course, I don't know how many other people he singled out, right? But he singled me out. He sees that I'm a roadside shrine. Wow. So I was, you know, I talked to Linda, and I thought, oh, Linda, come on, I want to go do this. This is getting... And she just looked at me. Oh, that's my wife. That's my wife. And then one morning, I was with Suzuki Roshi, and I don't know, in the hall or something, I don't know where, and he said to me, you have a great treasure. And he said, and then he went like this, you have a great treasure. And he said, somebody may try to steal it from you. Don't let anybody steal it from you. That's all he said. That's period. That's all he said. That was it. So I didn't, so I went home to Linda and I said, oh, I'm staying here. Because, you know, we don't need much, but we do need a little bit of support. And in that case, I got enough to stay. Till my grumbling started again. So anyway, in this case, Yento's statement, don't you know that the family treasure doesn't come in through the gate? Let it flow out from your own breast to cover the sky and the earth. Not only settled down his grumbling, but he woke up. He woke up and he said, Turtle Mountain has finally awakened. Remember, he's on Turtle Mountain? So he didn't feel like he'd awakened. Not he, not the person who's traveling on that mind road to try to get somewhere, but the awakening of everything, the awakening on the mountain, of all the beings on the mountain. All the beings. And so then later, Shui Feng became a great teacher. Seppo became a great teacher. Ganto was not known as a teacher later. Yento was not known as a teacher. Seppo became the great teacher, even though he was very old. And according to the story, thousands of people came to see him. And when they thanked him, he said, it has nothing to do with me. And he wasn't being humble, you guys. It's Turtle Mountain, right? What can it have to do with you? What can it have to do with me? It's Turtle Mountain. Where does Turtle Mountain begin and where does it end? Where do you think? Where do you think? So, in these two stories then, in the second story, Yento or Ganto, and the first story, the historical Buddha, they're acting as wise friends. Wise friends. And they're not doing very much, but a wise friend doesn't have to do very much. A friend who's not so wise is always doing all kinds of stuff, right? And we think, oh, come on, enough, enough. But a wise friend doesn't have to do very much, just at those key times, to give us the support we need. And sometimes even to let us, not give us any support is a way of giving us support. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. So that we can discover the treasure. So that we can open up to the treasure that's always here. So that we can no longer be tangled in those different mind roads that we're always going down. Usually three or four at a time. In different directions, although sometimes in the same direction. And also, these two guys, this Seppo guy and this Ananda guy, they're slow horses of a different kind. They're both slow horses. Ananda becomes Buddha's most famous disciple. He becomes Buddha's most famous disciple. And you know, he has no awakening during Buddha's life. Nothing. Nothing. And you know the story. He almost doesn't get to come to the first council, right? Because he hasn't had any awakening. Well, the first council would have been pretty dull without him, because see, Ananda had a busy mind. He had a mind that a worrying, busy mind. He put that busy mind to the service of someone. Shakyamuni Buddha. That's, he put it to that service, to serve Shakyamuni Buddha, to remember. Because he knew this was important. Even though his mind wasn't still, he knew it was important. He could serve. And he remembered where Buddha put things. Even though Buddha didn't remember, Ananda remembered because he had a busy mind. So he was great. But they almost left him out because he hadn't had an awakening. And then according to the story, which is totally mythology, I mean, the whole story is mythology anyway, right? Probably. We don't know. The night before the first council, what happened? Ananda sat up all night doing zazen and had an awakening. So then they all cheered and welcomed him to the first council. And then he was the main man. And it's a little fishy, but myths are like that, you know. And they all welcomed him to the first council. And what?
Just in time.
Yeah, right. So Seppo had a busy mind. Seppo was a wonderful cook. He was one of the early guys in China who was really into cooking. He had a busy mind. He took his busy mind to the kitchen and he prepared wonderful meals for the other practitioners, for the teacher, for everyone with his busy mind. And he didn't think I'm serving, but he had some love of the Dharma, love of people who are practicing. He did serve without using his busy mind. And he had he was dexterous. He had good manual labor and good skills. So that whenever he was at a temple, the temple got shaped up, got painted. The yard got taken care of because he used his busy mind. He used his busy mind. So, whether you're the first horse or the last horse or the best horse or the worst horse, it's sort of irrelevant, really, isn't it? Just another judgment, isn't it? Just another way of comparing and worrying or being happy or thinking you're a roadside shrine or you're almost ready to be a roadside shrine with just this next set or something, right? So in the Air Force, they say, supposedly they say this, I don't know, but I read this. Well, I think I heard this on TV. Eternal vigilance is the price of freedom. Eternal vigilance is the price of freedom. Well, that's pretty good Zen, isn't it? Eternal vigilance. Ananda and Seppo both learned to be vigilant in their own ways. Their zazen was not so... Their zazen was pretty busy, but they kept at it. But their vigilance in other ways supported all beings. And then finally they became great supporters and great teachers of all the Sangha members. Finally they learned, I think, that to be vigilant for happiness does not mean to look for it. Or expect to get it. Real vigilance is not vigilant for something, even for freedom. Because it's already here. It's welling up. Your treasure. Doesn't even well up, it's just here. So, I said to my friend Phil, I'm way, way back now in California, I said to my friend Phil, oh, you must be getting tired of taking Suzuki Roshi home every, whatever day it was, Thursday, in rush hour. Especially since I know you said that you wanted to do this to have some private time with him. And I think I talked last time about Phil once telling Suzuki Roshi a dream he had on the first trip up, and Suzuki Roshi even falling asleep during the dream. So I said, "You must be getting tired of doing this. I can help. I don't have classes in the morning on Thursdays, so I can help. I'll take him up." And he said, "No." He said, "This traffic is my con." Oh, he said it in kind of a resigned way, the way my grandmother would say, "Oh dear, it's my cross to bear." But that's what he said. "This traffic is my con." And then he lit up and he said, "And he's teaching me little by little to rest where I am." So I never drove him up. So those are the two stories. And and our lives are really pretty simple. Pretty simple. But we make them kind of complicated. Kind of complicated. So, questions or comments?
Are you suggesting that Amanda and Sasha no longer had a busy mind after they were in Amanda?
No, I'm actually not suggesting that. No. There's research that's been done about this. It shows that some people just have busier minds than others for their whole lives. And I, like some people are have darker skin or lighter skin or are more outsiders or insiders. I'm not suggesting that. I'm suggesting that we shouldn't be judged this, that sometimes the busy mind can learn to rest where it is too. And to let a lot of thoughts pass through in a very busy way and not be upset by them. And just come back to its activity. Just be engaged in its activity, whatever activity it is, without discriminating between busy and not busy. And this really happened to these two guys. And because they'd, so they're just two examples of great teachers, but they're two busy mind examples of great teachers. And if Ananda hadn't had the busy mind, I don't think he would have memorized all that stuff. He wouldn't have memorized it. If he had a mind like mine, sorry, but he wouldn't have memorized it. And geez, what a service! I mean, what a service to the community and to 2,000 years of Buddhism because of his busy mind. Other people? Yeah.
I wanted to say, because it happened this morning, I was been setting the cones, and what arose for me was taking me back to my childhood when I would sit and listen to my mother tell stories. Read from books. And a couple of my favorites were Ferdinand the Bull. If you remember that, he's this lazy bull, and they try all sorts of things, and he sits on a bee and becomes this great, magnificent, fierce bull. The other one that came up was, one of my favorite storybooks was Mrs. Pigglewiggle. And she had this house where one room had all the furniture up on the ceiling. And they had stories in here, and one of the stories was about a kid who wouldn't clean up his room, and it got so bad that he couldn't get out of his room, and his mother had to feed him with a garden rake, stuck carrots and potatoes and hung him up in the window. And I thought, well, these are just the same type of story. They're just, you know, and Aiken in the Momocan talks about, they're just stories that were written down at some point, but they were passed down and changed to fit, you know. And,
that's right.
And it really freed me up to just let that beginner's mind come out. to be that kid again, sitting, you know, listening to my mother tell stories, you know, about the tigers that would run around the bottom of the tree and turn into a butter. Wonderful that must have been, you know, and it just kind of was one of those aha moments. So I'm really relishing this practice period and finding, settling in, I think.
Thank you.